This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Who perpetrates hoaxes on the public? Who believes these fakes? And why? Kevin Young is the author of Bunk, The Rise of Hoaxes, Humbug, Plagiarists, Phonies, Post-Facts, and Fake News. He'll discuss his book on Thursday, January 31st, in room 2452 of Knaus Hall at Western Michigan University. His appearance is sponsored by the university's Center for the Humanities, as well as the English Department. Kevin Young, thank you for making some time for us.
Thanks for having me.
You take us back to P.T. Barnum. He can't be the first person that tried to pull one over on somebody. But how important a figure is he historically when we're talking about the issue of bunk?
Well, I don't think Barnum invented the hoax by any means, but he certainly came close to perfecting it. He managed in his show starting in 1835 when he displayed a woman named Joyce Heth, who he claimed to be George Washington's nursemaid, which would have made her be 161 years old. He really established this kind of connection to the American public. As he put it, every crowd has a silver lining. And he was really interested in separating people for their money, but also providing them with what he saw as humbug, but not as something that wasn't exciting, but something that was a good show. Obviously, there's some troubling stuff once you start to look at his shows up close, and a lot of things that mirror today's fake news and fakery writ large.
And do these hoaxes and fakery often, especially in the case when we go back to P.T. Barnum, sort of reinforce biases and prejudices and racism that the public holds in their heads before even this is brought to their attention?
I think so. You know, one of the ideas I had about the hoax, I had several. One was, you know, are hoaxes worse now? And sort of the answer tended to be yes. And also I was interested in what are hoaxes really about? They're not about what sometimes people claim they're about, like the thin line between fact and fiction. Instead, they seem to me, and the more I dug in it, the more true this seemed, to be about the deep divisions between people. They prey on that very much because they're fake. So they're making stories up about things that people, you know, might worry are true, or their deepest fears, or in many cases, fantasies. And I think Barnum was really good at sort of pinning both the fantasy and the fear, and also this kind of air of superiority. You would go to see Joyce Heth, and it would connect you to George Washington and American past, which I think was really powerful for folks. At the same time, you know, there was issues of slavery afoot and very much at play in the Joyce Heth hoax. Joyce Heth, we think he purchased and owned as a slave, and he's touring her around. And then once she died, she was black. He had her dissected in a medical theater for money in New York City. And, you know, the image and the dissection, it's still with us in some ways, these kind of metaphoric ways that hoaxes dissect and depend on race and gender and all sorts of questions that still are at work in our culture.
And going back to that idea of Barnum as the perfection of the hoax, he used that dissection as a way to disprove this idea that she had somehow been connected to George Washington. So therefore, Barnum sort of reveals his own hoax not to be true. He doesn't get caught the way so many others do. He goes ahead and lays it out there and says, oh, see, there is. It's not true, even though I was telling you this all along.
Yeah, he gets it both ways. And I think that's a powerful thing that he realized about it. He could incorporate the debunking of the hoax as part of the hoax. And he used that to sell more tickets, to sell more papers, to become more central in the culture. And I think you see fakery doing much the same today. In Barnum's day, there were the advent of the penny press. And so papers then were a penny when they used to be a nickel. And so much like the internet, they promised this kind of democratic access. But they also, it turns out, like the internet, are really dependent on hoaxes and dependent on aspects of fakery that we might recognize today.
Are all of us susceptible? Do all of us, you know, bring preconceived notions to things, or maybe we have hopes that someone can prey upon and get us to fall for a hoax?
Well, it's interesting because one of the things I came to understand is that in the past, hoaxes really, and Barnum's day up to sort of the early 20th century, really were preying on hope. You know, they weren't preying on fear so much. It isn't to say that they weren't elements that are disturbing. Another of Barnum's hoaxes in 1860, he showed a black man who he claimed to be the missing link and called "What Is It?" question mark. And it was a hugely popular show, and his picture's on the cover of my book. And I try to argue him as a slightly different figure than Barnum would have had him. Certainly he was not in any way the missing link. These were all fictions created and preyed on our sort of biggest, deepest division, which is race. And Barnum used pseudoscience and real science, I mean, in 1860, it's just a few months after Origin of Species, to suggest its opposite. And I think that was what was brilliant about him, is he could take something that seemed to disprove his hoax and turn it into more hoaxing. And right now, we're in this situation where it's not an accident that, say, bots or the computer targeting and hacking that went on also targeted questions of race and targeted and invented hoaxes around race. And those kinds of questions are still with us. And what I trace in the book is its shape from Barnum to now.
And what those bots can do, of course, is find out what websites we're visiting, so perhaps they get an idea of some of the things we might already believe, and they can feed into them. I mean, I suppose, you know, in a way that the data makes it even more possible to perpetrate the hoax on the person who displays out there what their beliefs and biases are.
Well, the question, you know, comes up is, you know, are we more sophisticated about these things? You think we would be. I think it taps the same primal stuff, the hoax or the bots or the more recent hoaxes and fakery. They go after these same touch points and deep divisions. And I think the difference is they used to kind of use them to suggest unity, and now they really are telling us things are as bad as we fear they are. The hoaxes really are very tragic now, and that's one of the changes in the hoax that I trace. And you see that people aren't hoaxing that, you know, everything's great. They're hoaxing that things are terrible. You know, this pizza parlor really is the center of a horrible sex ring. You know, there's a lot of disturbing hoaxing that happens, and you see it reflected in sort of our divisions that I think continue beyond the hoax. That's, I think, the danger, is that the hoax lingers, and we meet each other almost like we're hoax-like. And I think the difference now is Barnum used to pitch that you too could be an expert. You could come and see Joyce Heth, and whether you thought she was real or not, that was part of the pleasure, is you got to be an expert. And now there's this notion that there are no more experts. And I think that's a really dangerous shift that we've experienced.
Now, you include this quote from Mary Carr, "Whoever believes the least wins because he'll never be found wrong." And then you go on to write from that, that while doubt has increased, there's actually an increase in hoaxing, and presumably also an increase in the hoaxes that are actually successful.
Well, yeah. I mean, we see them in literary scenes. We see them in journalistic scenes in terms of, but there's even more disturbing aspect now, is it isn't so much that there's more hoaxes, though I think, as I trace in the book, that's true. It's also that people accuse someone of hoax. That's the biggest hoax now, as you say, you're fake, or that's fake news, to something you don't like. And the danger there is this kind of overarching and nefarious cynicism that's really seeped in our polis. And this kind of idea is really taken root. And so it becomes easier to trick someone. You think it wouldn't be. But if you believe that everything is fake, it becomes easier to believe something that isn't true. And so that really is where I'm most concerned, and where I'm trying to think about how we can get out of this cycle. Because the other thing is that hoaxes ebb and flow, and they occur more when we are experiencing these divisions and where things aren't as settled. There's more people faking that they are settled or that they are getting in these divisions.
When President Trump says fake news at a reporter who has written something he doesn't like, is he sort of taking advantage of that cynicism you mentioned that people have, that everything out there must be fake?
Well, I think he's taking advantage of it. Sometimes he's contributing to it. I mean, I think there's a real cynicism there, and a kind of paranoia, but also a kind of tunnel vision. These are not good things for what I think fights the hoax, which is listening a bit, being a bit skeptical, because I do think, like a good journalist, we should be skeptical, but we shouldn't be so cynical that we can't recognize the truth when we see it, especially if it makes us a little uncomfortable. And, you know, what happens then is then it isn't that facts get disputed, but the idea of the very idea of truth gets disputed. And I'm not a relativist. I think that there are things that are true, and we can agree about them, or we can spend a lot of time fighting with them instead of the things that are going to solve the problems. You know, we can disagree about the solutions, but it's hard when you can't even agree that there's this problem.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. I'm speaking with Kevin Young, the author of Bunk, The Rise of Hoaxes, Humbug, Plagiarists, Phonies, Post-Facts, and Fake News. He will speak at Western Michigan University Thursday night, January 31st, at 7 o'clock in room 2452 of Knaus Hall. You also have a quote from Ben Bradley's autobiography, A Good Life, that says, "Beware of stories you want to be true for whatever reason." Of course, he's talking about that from a journalistic standpoint, but also can we look at that from the audience standpoint, that perhaps you want to believe this story is true, so you're just more inclined to think, yeah, it must be true?
Sure. I mean, I think we very much collude with the hoax, you know. I started out writing about why do people deceive, and I quickly started thinking about why we believe. And I think there's so many reasons, but a lot of it is because we want to. We very much want to connect to something. And if something is presented much like we believe it will be, like when James Frey writes a book, A Million Little Pieces, and in it there's this recovery narrative where he doesn't use any drugs, even when he's getting oral surgery. You know, we want to believe that's true, even though it just smacks in the daylight of untruth. That book still sells, and, you know, there's still a kind of way of looking over, or overlooking, I should say, the truth of the matter, or even our gut that might tell us, you know, that doesn't sound quite right. You know, he gets on the plane bleeding from the face. You can't even get on with an extra bag. So it's a strange time that people are looking past that. But, you know, as I trace in the book, there's a connection to the past and our wish to be sort of a little bit fooled, made to be an expert, and, you know, to be entertained in some way. I liken it to reality TV, which you kind of know is fake, but, you know, you still watch The Bachelor anyway. There's a way in which you're trying to find out what's going to happen, even if you know there's a kind of calculated quality to it.
James Frey's an interesting one that you bring up, because, as you say in the book, well, he was an addict, and most people who truly struggle with addiction do have quite a story to tell, and yet he still felt the need to exaggerate it and throw in these stories that, as you say, when you kind of take a hard look at them, don't pass the smell test. Why do you think we look at ways to exaggerate stories, which are sometimes even good stories on their own, with the truth being at the center of it?
I think because the truth can be messier. Mary Carr is really great at thinking about this, specifically about Frey, and she writes beautifully about addiction, and, you know, it's true and hard and complicated. We all know someone who struggled with this, so I can see why we want to connect with it. But there's also a kind of superhuman overcoming quality that book in particular, A Million Little Pieces, is trying to sell you. And I think that is where I want us to maybe think about, why do we need that? You know, why do we need Lance Armstrong not just to win a Tour de France, but win the most ever, the most in a row? I remember thinking back to, you know, people said his lungs were just different. You know, why do we need that desire? And I think in Lance Armstrong's case, and he's one of the most sort of egregious in the book, I mean, he, you know, did this with the post office, one of my favorite institutions on earth. He sort of rooked them and the rest of us. I think it's because we all know someone who dealt with cancer, and it wasn't enough for us just to survive. We wanted someone who's going to triumph. And so to prey upon that, even though, you know, he did have he was a survivor, but then to turn that into, you know, I did things all natural, that's really troubling, you know. But we want to believe that. We want to believe in nature and in the power of the self. And what the hoax sells us is a kind of fake self. And I think that's what's really troubling about it. That's why it really gives us pause, and why I ended up writing the book.
You write about Stephen Glass, who made up several stories that ended up running in the New Republic. He also wrote for some other publications.
He wrote 52 fake stories.
Right. Yeah. Quite a bit.
And other, you know.
Yes. And then after that, he came back. He tried to write a novel that was trying to give his side of the story. He tried to become an attorney. And I guess all of that kind of led me to a question about we like stories of redemption in America. We like to give people the second chance. But when someone's been part of a hoax, how do we get them back into acceptance knowing that they lied to us? They tricked us.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, it's a tough question. I mean, I think, you know, there's some things that are so extreme because they affect people. And, you know, sometimes people hoax as a kind of prank and, you know, they say no harm. But in those two cases, say Armstrong and Glass, there's someone who really did this for a long time and who then didn't admit it for a long time when even the truth came out. And I think that kind of is really hard to reckon with. And it makes it hard, you know, people's lives were affected. And I think that's the thing I end up trying to convey, too, is that there's a kind of notion that the hoax is just harmless. But really, because it's preying on these deep things, our wellness, our sense of wholeness, sickness, death, you know, race, life, all these questions that are at the center of our social and personal being, it really is hard to say, hey, you know, all's forgiven. That said, I think there are some people who are trying hard to do so, and, you know, time will tell whether that works or not.
When somebody is part of a journalistic scam, is it somewhat worse? Because we would often think, well, journalists should be the ones who show us what is true, and they should be the ones who throw the flag on somebody who is perpetrating a hoax. But when the hoax comes from within, does it do more to, as we talked about at the beginning, breed mistrust?
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, I want the same from my politicians, for instance. I want them to have a higher standard than a journalist, for sure. But I would say that journalists do have high standards. All the hoaxes, the journalistic hoaxes I can think of and that I trace in the book are caught by other journalists, you know. And I'm really struck again and again by how Bill Bradley, being one case where he obviously was involved in the Watergate revelations, and what a powerful editor who was then hoaxed himself in the 80s. And he was really tremendous, I think, in responding. And he's someone who, I think, thought a lot about why did this work on me specifically, but also on all of us who are involved in it and involved in, you know, believing it. And I think that that's what's interesting, is that journalists really are policing other journalists. They're the ones who say, here's the standards, you know. And you see with something like Me Too how good journalism can really change our society and can think about how what the truth is and find many and do investigations that lead to the truth. And I think that's what I try to help people remember, because it can be quite dispiriting when, you know, some story that means a lot to you or that connects to these deep divisions and these deep questions turns out not to have been true.
So you tell us many times that hoaxes do some damage to our society in many ways. They reinforce stereotypes and racial prejudice. They divide us. Is it, though, possible that someone could perpetrate a hoax in such a way that it exposes these things? I guess I'm thinking here that is what Sacha Baron Cohen claims that he's been trying to do with his characters, is use these hoaxes as a way to show prejudice, racism, etc. Can it work that way, or is that maybe not the path someone should take?
You know, it's an interesting question. I do spend some time thinking about the difference between a hoax and a prank. You know, I almost think those are more pranks or stunts that are meant to be revealed. And often the hoaxer, while there's a kind of almost confession after the fact, you look and you're like, that is such an obvious tell. Maybe they were trying to get caught. They generally aren't, you know, and they generally would keep going until they're caught, and then often past that. You know, and someone like Sacha Baron Cohen the revelation is half of the gig and the gag. And so, and the kind of double knowledge that you know that this isn't true, that isn't the case with hoaxes. And, you know, people who are close to, say, Bernie Madoff, you know, lost millions of dollars, if not billions. And it's because he preyed on these deep divisions. And he was another kind of hoaxer. And, you know, once you start looking, you can see it in all these aspects of American culture.
I almost hesitate to ask this, but is there another book that could be written on hoaxes? And do you want to write it?
That's a great question. I realized at a certain point I had to sort of stop. And I just told my editor, like, there's another one every week, you know. And
Rachel Dolezal came up, right, while you were trying to finish this book,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, and I ended up writing about her, and I'm glad I did. But, you know, I think the thing that I've noted is the ways that it's so extreme. It's worse than we thought, say, in terms of the election, say, in terms of day-to-day life and other aspects of fakery that we thought couldn't be quite touched or weren't touched quite as badly. So there is something to be said about that. And, you know, sometimes I think about, you know, is there an epilogue? But at the same time, you know, the book is, what I like about the book, you know, is looking back on it, I really was thinking about the history of the hoax, and it does apply then to the future of it, which is all around us.
Kevin Young is the author of Bunk, The Rise of Hoaxes, Humbug, Plagiarists, Phonies, Post-Facts, and Fake News. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Kevin Young will speak at Western Michigan University on Thursday, January 31st. Links with more details can be found at WMUK.org. You can subscribe to WMUK's West Southwest podcast through Apple iTunes and Google. If you like what you hear, consider giving us a rating and writing a review. It's one way to make more people aware of the podcast. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.